Today is Monday, June 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, in the midst of a pandemic, mass demonstrations continue in dozens of cities across the United States over the killing of a black man in police custody. The mayor of Washington, D.C. accuses the president of stoking the unrest over racism.
These comments are an attack on humanity, and they are an attack on black America, and they make my city less safe. And we have to call it what it is.
Also ahead, a bright light on some otherwise dark days as the crew of the SpaceX blast off over the weekend and reach the International Space Station. It's all on today's International Edition. Nations around the world have watched in horror at the civil unrest in the United States following the death of George Floyd, a black man who died after a white police officer pressed his knee on his neck until he stopped breathing. Burning cars and American riot police featured on newspaper front pages Sunday across the globe. The story bumped the news of the COVID-19 pandemic to second-tier status. Thousands also marched in cities across Europe. Protests formed across America again over the weekend, even as glass and graffiti from the previous night's unrest were still being cleaned up. In Washington, D.C., some of the most intense protests against police brutality took place outside of the White House. Police beat unarmed demonstrators and fired tear gas and other explosives into the crowds, while some protesters threw rocks and fireworks. VOA's Jason Patinkin files this report, which contains some graphic language and sounds of explosions.
A riot at the White House. Police and protesters clashed for hours in the heart of Washington, D.C. this weekend, part of a wave of nationwide protests demanding justice for George Floyd and an end to the systemic police brutality against black people in the United States. Floyd, a black man from the state of Minnesota, was killed by a white police officer last week. Tensions were high in Washington just after sunset and quickly escalated into violence. As unarmed protesters tried to walk toward the White House, police formed a line blocking them and unleashed pepper spray. A middle-aged black man lay on the ground, writhing in pain after the attack. Another unarmed protester, a white 22-year-old named Byron Bouchara from the state of Virginia, vented his anger at the officers after being sprayed in the face.
Our taxes go to your salaries, you monsters!
Nearing the White House gates, the protesters demanded police officers be held accountable for killing black people.
No justice!
At the gates, most protesters were peaceful, but some began throwing bricks and rocks at police, who responded with more pepper spray. Other protesters lit trash cans and dumpsters on fire and shot fireworks at the officers, who were dressed in military-style gear. But there were sharp divisions between the protesters as to whether to throw objects at police and light things on fire. At one point, a fight broke out as one protester tried to stop another from setting a signpost ablaze. Deidre O'Brien, a black protester from Washington, D.C., said she helped put out a trash can fire and that she wanted the demonstrations to be peaceful.
We are out here tonight. We want to make sure that this is a peaceful demonstration, that at no means do we want to start anything, because we want to ensure that it's safe out here for us to be able to exercise our rights.
But the violence escalated anyway. After a firecracker landed among police and demonstrators, police fired tear gas, smoke bombs, and stun grenades indiscriminately into the crowds of unarmed protesters. VOA saw one photographer knocked to the ground, bleeding from his right eye. Another woman was hit in the leg with shrapnel from an explosive, apparently fired by police. VOA also witnessed police beating unarmed protesters who had their hands in the air. By midnight, the police stormed the area, and the air around the White House was thick with tear gas. But there appears no end in sight to the unrest in America's capital. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington.
President Donald Trump has not addressed the nation directly about what has been happening in the past few days, but he has been tweeting in what many say are statements that are fueling the flames. At a news conference over the weekend, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser said President Trump's tweets threatening violent crackdowns on protesters, saying they could face vicious dogs, are just stoking division.
To make a reference to vicious dogs is no subtle reminder to African Americans of segregationists who let dogs out on women, children, and innocent people in the South.
Meanwhile, in Minneapolis, where this all began with the killing of George Floyd, buildings have been burned and intense violence has continued. U.S. officials are also looking to determine whether extremist groups are infiltrating these protests to deliberately tip peaceful demonstrations toward violence, and if foreign adversaries are behind a burgeoning disinformation campaign on social media. For the latest on what's happening in Minneapolis and who the people are taking to the streets there is criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. Jack, what is the latest on the ground in the city of Minneapolis?
I was standing in front of the 5th Police precinct in Minneapolis. Broken windows. Across the street is a post office that's burnt to the ground. Next to that is a large bank burnt to the ground. Down the street, more buildings burnt to the ground. More than 255 businesses in Minneapolis and St. Paul no longer exist. You go to the 3rd Police District, it's completely gutted. So what we're seeing right now is empty streets and people bewildered, scared, tired. And when it gets dark, we know that it's coming again. Is it over? No. We have 3 times as many police in the streets as we had normally. And we're in lockdown at 8 p.m. until 6 a.m.
When you say it's coming again, what are you meaning?
What I expect to see is more protests on the one side, in many cases, peaceful protests. But there's another element here, and that other element brings violence. That element brings potentially more arson, brings guns, gunshots, brings responses from the police. And so what you're seeing is this ramping up back and forth. The problem is there are no winners, and yet we're here one more night. I don't even know. Is this day 5?
What about the police presence? How are they responding? We've been seeing a lot of violence across the country in many, many cities. And who are the people out there protesting? Are they all people that are fed up with what they see as continued inequality in the justice system? Or are there others participating? And how are police responding out there?
There are a lot of police in the street right now, and they are ramping up. It's not just police. It's actually National Guard as well. And so in combination, you're seeing that ramping up. Are they getting more aggressive? Absolutely they are. Are they firing more rubber bullets? Absolutely. Are they using more tear gas? No question about it. That is taking place as we speak. In fact, we have seen just in the last couple of days, multiple sets of reporters arrested, shot with rubber bullets, even after they have their insignia out, even though they say, we're press, where do you want us to go? They're still getting shot. And so that's happening even in the last couple of days. I think that's just a hint of what we're dealing with. There's multiple kinds of people in the street right now. I think there are those people who are simply trying to get justice served. At the same time, there are others out there that seem to have an agenda. One of the groups that I absolutely know is here because I have people I know talking about it and seeing them on the streets, and these are white supremacists. They are here. Some about 6 blocks from where I live right now, there were white supremacists in the streets, and there are others who continue to come, apparently not from Minnesota, but they're coming for that reason too. So they are here as well, and that exacerbates all of this, because then the question is, what is this about? Is this about George Floyd, the man who was killed on Monday by this police officer, or is this about something else, a greater agenda? That's the question everybody has right now.
How can you be sure that these are white supremacists or white nationalists?
You have people with out-of-state plates, Trump hats, They have stickers on the backs of their cars that are white supremacist stickers. What that means is there's a certain cross that you will see that represents white supremacy. They had them on both of these SUVs. These SUVs were side by side. They had maps out on the hoods of their SUVs, and they were seen to be making decisions. This is very publicly, which is shocking that you would see this. This comes from somebody I know who's a former prosecutor, who's a veteran. He's a former sniper himself. He saw this and he said, "You're not going to believe what I just saw." And this was outside his house.
The officer that has been now charged, the one of four, the one who had his knee on the neck of George Floyd when he died, is expected to have a court appearance today. What is this hearing about?
The purpose of this appearance is called a first appearance to acknowledge what the charges are and then to set bail. Because at this point, that officer is in custody. And he'll appear before a judge who will make that determination. They have to set a cash bail in Minnesota, so they can't hold him without bail. So there is going to be a number. My expectation is, in normal situations, I would expect somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million. We'll see exactly what the judge does in this case, but that's the first step. At least then they will set for something called an omnibus date to give more time to figure out and get other evidence to the defense so they know where they're going to go next.
That is Minneapolis-based criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. Thank you so much for the update. Well, all that is happening has brought to the surface the simmering racial divide in the United States and the inequalities of pay, imprisonment, and even deaths from COVID-19. International Edition's Steve Miller talked about it with Derek Johnson, president and CEO of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and asked him why this is happening in the U.S. in 2020.
What is unfortunate is happening. We have in this country not dealt with the issues of race and the value of African-American lives. In Minneapolis, we are seeing this because of one individual, the district attorney, who has refused to move with the times. We commend the city, the police chief, and the mayor for taking aggressive actions. It is undisputable that the camera positionings gave us the facts of what was taking place. The standard is probable cause. We have plenty of probable cause that these officers committed the murder. And finally today, one of the officers have been charged and brought into custody.
Governor Tim Walz recently addressed the public, and he said that there would be a reckoning of the inequalities that led to this event. What does that look like to you, and what do you think needs to happen to bring about equality in terms of not only what's happening in Minnesota, but throughout the United States?
Well, last year, the NAACP, we issued an economic report on the city of Minneapolis. And we had a forewarning in there if the gap in social mobility, economic opportunity, was not closed in that city. It was like a powder keg. Something was bound to take place. And what we've seen this past week is that something taking place. It is not only what happened with the police murder of Mr. Floyd. It's also the underlying economic conditions of that city that has been systemic and long-lasting.
What about elsewhere? Because this is not the only time this has happened in the U.S.
Well, unfortunately, we've seen this pattern for far too long. NAACP, 111 years old, from 1920 to 1933, we used to hang a flag out of our window say another man was lynched yesterday. We are at a point now that we have to hang out that flag once again on social media to say we're done dying. Because far too often across the country, the value of the lives of those who are being victimized by law enforcement for all practical purposes is something that needs to be reevaluated, that we are equal under this Constitution, we are human, and there's a moral question here for many people to really grapple with, that we are as much citizens and human as anyone else in this country.
You mentioned the hashtag, we are done dying here, and that you're hanging out a virtual flag on social media that another person has died. What actions is the NAACP taking to bring about those discussions of equality?
Well, we are moving the discussion so people could take action. The action for us is in November at the election poll. When you see the incident that took place in Georgia, the district attorney's unwillingness to act, that same district attorney will be on the ballot in November. And now, because of the inaction, there's an opponent in the community. In Georgia, they will be voting at record highs as a result of that. We've seen it also in Minneapolis, where that district attorney and elected officials have refused or were slow to act. And I can assure you, once he's on the ballot, there's going to be a heightened a movement towards the polls. We've seen that across the country, whether it's the election of the district attorney in Chicago or in Jacksonville, Florida, or in Columbus, Mississippi. There's an aggressive piece of activity that people are beginning to pay attention to, that in order for there to be justice, in order for police officers to be held accountable, we have to have district attorney offices that truly believe that everyone should be afforded equal protection under the law.
One last question here. You know, we've seen the protests that then escalated into riots. There's more protests scheduled this weekend, not only in Minnesota, but throughout the United States. Taking everything that's happened this past week into consideration, what are you most hopeful for?
Well, we're hopeful that as we move forward, that nonviolent, peaceful protest is an indication that the system has broken down, that there is no true justice. But when the justice system actually works for all of the community and there are opportunities for all of the community, there will be no need for these type of protests. As NAACP, we absolutely oppose rioting. That never solves anything. But peaceful protest is a way for the citizens of this country to bring forth grievances of injustice as we see them.
International Edition Steve Miller speaking with Derek Johnson, president and CEO of the NAACP. Here are some of the other stories we are following at VOA. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden on Sunday toured the site of one of the protests that ripped through the U.S. overnight and called for protesters against police brutality to not turn to violence. Wearing a face mask, this was only Biden's second appearance outside of his Delaware home since the coronavirus hit in March. He visited an area in the city of Wilmington where demonstrators vented their outrage of another death of a black man by police. Retail giant Target said Sunday it had shut its stores across the U.S. as retailers, already reeling from closures because of the coronavirus pandemic, shut outlets amid protests that included looting in many U.S. cities. Meanwhile, global coronavirus cases surpassed 6 million over the weekend as Latin America reported a grim milestone of 50,000 deaths from the disease. Countries such as Brazil, Chile, and Mexico are struggling to stem the spread of the virus, which initially peaked in China in February before large-scale outbreaks followed in Europe and the United States. There are also concerns that these ongoing protests in the U.S. will result in a rise in cases in this country. Stay with VOA for all the latest on this ongoing unrest. In other news from around the world, Cameroon's military says three of five men recently arrested by Togolese police and portrayed by Togolese media as notorious criminals who committed serious offenses against Togolese citizens are Cameroonian soldiers, while the other two are former convicts. The three military men stole weapons from the military headquarters in Yaounde and went to Togo's capital, where they used the weapons to harass Togolese, according to police. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Cameroonian military spokesperson Atongfa Gemo says investigations by the military indicate that Tanga Clement Didier Mogu, Umaru Abdul Fadil and Ewunje Elie Serge Hubert, who were arrested in Lomé for robbery and harassment of civilians, are notorious, dangerous, and dishonest members of the Cameroon military.
Les punitions pour les manquements à la discipline.
He says Cameroon has started disciplinary and administrative proceedings against the men as provided for by military regulations and that Togo should punish them as its laws provide. He says Cameroon's defense ministry denies responsibility for their crimes and atrocities because the men in question have broken off links with Cameroon's military. Gemo said the other two men arrested in Lomé are civilians with criminal records and were wanted. He said the five arrested in Togo were helped by another military officer, Esimbi Francis, who has been arrested for his role in other crimes and is being held in Yaoundé. Togo media reported May 20 that the five Cameroonians had been arrested in Lomé after using weapons to rob a Togolese businessman of his car and money. Cameroonian media reported that Yendube Duti, head of the Lomé Research and Criminal Investigation Unit of the Togolese police, said the five men confessed they were using weapons they obtained from the Cameroon Defense Headquarters in Yaoundé.
Le cerveau de la bande, le nommé Ntanga Clément
he says
Didier,
investigations
alias
carried out by Togolese police indicate that the brain behind the group of robbers is Ntanga Clément Didier Mogu, known as Tony, a member of the Cameroon military. He says Tony convinced his colleague Umaru Abou-Fadil, who was in charge of weapons at Cameroon's defense headquarters in Yaoundé, to steal automatic pistols and go with him to Togo, where they could make a better living stealing and selling vehicles. Mogo, speaking on the state broadcaster Télévision Togolaise, said he and his group traveled to Lomé to buy cars for a senior military official he refused to name, but that they were tempted to steal when their stay was extended by COVID-19 travel restrictions.
Je suis venu au Togo, j'ai rencontré plusieurs
he says that he did not plan to steal when he left Yaoundé for Lomé, but that he asked his colleagues who controlled weapons at the defense headquarters to accompany him with pistols for security against possible attacks by highway robbers. He says after they got to Lomé, both Cameroon and Togo sealed their borders and they could not return. Mogu acknowledged that Togolese police arrested them after they stole money and a car from a rich Togolese businessman and were trying to escape. He said it was the only act of robbery they committed. Cameroon's military says whenever they return after facing justice in Togo, they will answer charges for the crimes committed in Cameroon and for damaging Cameroon's image in a foreign country, and that for now, they are no longer members of the Cameroonian military. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The UN Refugee Agency and partners are scaling up assistance to thousands of internally displaced people in eastern Nigeria who were forced to flee when their camp burst into flames. Two people were killed in the fire that broke out a week ago on the eve of the Muslim festival of Eid al-Fitr, marking the end of Ramadan. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
What was meant to be a festive occasion celebrating the end of Ramadan turned into a nightmare. On the eve of the Muslim festival of Eid al-Fitr, sparks from a cooking fireplace started a fire that spread throughout a camp housing 40,000 people who had fled Boko Haram violence. Two people died in the blaze. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees reports nearly 4,000 people, most of them women, lost all their goods. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu says the fire in this makeshift settlement has destroyed their shelters, razed houses to the ground, and damaged other facilities.
UNHCR is working with authorities, aid agencies, and local partners to make sure that those affected receive shelter and other relief items as people once again are being displaced outside and also inside the camp now. Many, including young children, are living under the open, basically living out into the open and without protection, but also needing immediate help, shelter, food, and clothing.
Nearly 300,000 people displaced by Boko Haram violence are living in organized and makeshift sites in and around Maiduguri. Mantu says the current tragedy is only the latest in a spate of fires that have broken out throughout the region in recent months. She says camps across northeast Nigeria are congested and shelters are too close together for safety.
With violence on the rise, the threat of COVID-19 also brings in new threats for internally displaced people living in overcrowded camps and settlements where physical distancing is impossible. In response, UNHCR is working with the UN Development Programme to expand several camps and build additional shelters.
Since the Boko Haram insurgency started in 2009, tens of thousands of people have been killed and 2.5 million have been displaced across the Lake Chad region. This number includes 1.8 million inside Nigeria and the rest in Cameroon and Chad. Despite numerous setbacks, Boko Haram remains a potent and dangerous force. The militant group has spawned other armed groups in the region, increasing violence. Aid agencies report thousands are fleeing for their lives every day. Those bearing the brunt of this ongoing conflict, they say, are young girls, old women, and aid workers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Botswana's president says his government will allow farmers to keep small game as a way to encourage locals' participation in agrotourism. Mukdisi Dube reports from Gaborone.
President Mokgweetsi Masisi says it is paramount for locals to have a significant stake in the tourism industry. Speaking during a televised address on Saturday, President Masisi said Botswana's tourism sector needed a boost after the severe impact of COVID-19.
In order to revive Botswana's tourism sector, government shall accelerate the initiatives aimed at stimulating local and regional tourism by creating an enabling environment for increased investment in the tourism sector and facilitate, in particular, citizen participation.
President Masisi said as one of the measures to boost tourism, his government will allow local farmers to keep wildlife within their properties.
The agritourism guidelines are also being reviewed to facilitate citizens to make a decent living out of their fields, Masim. To complement agritourism and diversify its products, game farming guidelines shall soon be issued to enable those Botswana who are interested to keep small wildlife or game in their fields as they meet set criteria.
Local farmer Banks Ndebele has previously sought permission to keep small game in his property outside the capital, Gaborone. He said while it is a welcome initiative, the government must remove bottlenecks which might impede implementation.
I think it's a welcome development because it has always been our belief that the agricultural sector needs to be diversified itself. One only hopes that government is going to remove the bottlenecks and impediments that will end up maybe discouraging people, taking up the initiative.
Tourism is a significant contributor to the Southern African nation's economy, employing nearly 100,000 people. But the impact of COVID-19 has been devastating, with all bookings cancelled for the rest of the year, leaving multitudes jobless. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
And we are going to leave you with just a song of unity as the world faces a pandemic and the U.S. is in crisis. In a reminder that we really are all one family of humans in these travails of life.
Trying to find the ocean.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. We thank you so much for listening. Please take care and be well.